The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Ratio's 2-1. Best we can figure out. Every minute you listen, 2 minutes off of purgatory. We can't say that for sure, because we really don't know how time works in the afterlife. But if you go according to our temporal judgment... That's our best guess. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program here, The Doctor Is In, as it has always been. This is the longest time I've ever been in. There was once for about 4 minutes when I was in college. I think I was a junior that I was in. I sat at the table in the cafeteria with a lot of the cool kids. About 4 minutes. And then most of them got up and left. But that 4 minutes, I was in. So today... going to be in for the next about 57. If you'd like to get onto the program and also be in and, in effect, sit at the table with the cheerleaders and the football players, 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. And I promise you I will not get up and leave. I'm here for the duration. I'm a psychologist heading for the office this afternoon, but for here, we're not gonna diagnose. Notice how I included you in the diagnosis, because a lot of you people do call in and think you have a diagnosis. You've decided. You've read. We will not diagnose. We won't do therapy. Certainly not going to step into the turf if you're seeing a professional. I can't do that. But we can do what we can to educate, give a little bit of help, a little bit of nudge, or sometimes hold you back. You don't need nudged. You're already heading face first too fast into a situation that you shouldn't be in. So, 877-573-7825. Just a pre-manalogue here. I was coming in, listening to Catholic radio. I listen a lot when it's not my show. I probably listen more intently to other shows than I do to my own. However, I made the observation many months ago that the word perfect has now become the default response of anybody, pretty much for the most part, especially those that you have to do business with over the phone. You want to give them your address. What do they say? Perfect. You spell your name out for them. What do they say? Perfect. How do you spell your name? G-U-A-R-E-N-D-I. Perfect. One time I'm going to misspell it. And just have them say perfect. G-U-R-A-N-D-E. Perfect. And I've noticed this. Perfect has just run rampant. It is the word. I was signing for a car, rental car, some months back. At an airport. And then I asked for my license and ID, and I handed it to them. What did they say? Perfect. I wanted to say, you didn't see the picture on that license, or you wouldn't have said that. Well, anyway... my point in all that was how fast linguistic patterns, habits, mimics occur. They roar through a population. I was listening to Catholic media, and the show got a call from someone in South America. South America. The host said something in the beginning of the question to the caller. I forget what it was. The caller from South America, Peru, to be more specific, said, perfect. It has jumped the Gulf of Mexico.
It is now into South America for those who speak English. I wonder what the Spanish word for perfect is, by the way. Perfecto. Always just kind of add a vowel at the end, then I can speak Spanish. That was just a pre-manologue. That's not the real manologue. Real manologue's this. Many parents are thrown for a loop by the intensity of a little kid's reaction to being frustrated. Major league fit. Meltdown. That's what they call it. Meltdown. Ground zero nuclear warhead kind of thing. And the parents are thinking, I can't deal with this kid. I'm trying. I'm trying to be reasonable here. I'm trying to give choices. I'm trying to be a grown-up about this, and this child just isn't doing it. Why am I being defeated by a 4-year-old or a 3-year-old? Or, unfortunately, 7- and 10-year-olds who still throw fits, which fits should be the domain of little preschoolers. Well, one of the reasons, there's a lot of the reasons, but one of the reasons is little kids don't follow any rules. If you're a little kid and you're mad, throw yourself down, kick something, scream as loud as you can scream, flail your arms in 9 different directions. Now, grown-ups generally don't do that. I have toyed with walking into my bosses at AVE or EWTN and saying, hey, I'd like a raise. And then they would say, no, Ray, sorry about that. We don't have the money, but even if we did, we don't think you deserve a raise. And then I could throw myself on the floor. I'm going to kick your plan over. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to scream so everybody out your door hears it. That's what's happening. And I'm going to pound my fist on your desk. Now, that's not likely to happen. I did it once and it didn't work. It is not likely to happen. Why? Because adults are supposed to be the majority of them, and maybe the larger majority of parents are guided by social constrictions, social propriety. So we don't do those things, but kids do. A parent will look at something like this and say, he's out of control. He's totally out of control. Yes, he is. Does that surprise you? He's 3. Why wouldn't he be totally out of control? Do you suspect that he'll say, you know, I'm getting a little carried away here. I do need to exert some self-control. Not that big a deal that I didn't get that 3rd cookie. Yeah, I am kind of overreacting, don't you think so? How immature of me. That's not going to happen. And so that kind of rule-breaking, that kind of emotional let it all hang out, throws parents for a loop, throws grandparents for a loop. And the danger, which is a comment for a future date, the danger in this is that the parent can think something is wrong with the child. He shouldn't be reacting this intensely. And I always want to say, well, what is this intensely? Where's your boundary line here from normal intensity to abnormal intensity? Well, he goes on for like 27 minutes. All right, so your boundary line's 25 minutes? Exactly. Where's exactly your boundary line here? And as parents, we, of course, can't allow ourselves that kind of freedom of emotion. We get in trouble. Rightfully so. We're expected to act a little older than 3. Me, I go for 7 and 8 most of the time. That's what shakes up parents. Little kids, when they're mad, don't follow any rules. They have very little in the way of self-restraint because they're little. And they're emotional and they're self-centered and they're guided by their wants for the moment. And they think they're the center of the universe. Now, all of those come together to create an image that looks like it is not of this world. But it is. And we grown-ups have to deal with it. However, probably the worst way to deal with it is the way that we grown-ups think we should deal with it. by reasoning. Ooh. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. I am Dr. Ray. This is The Doctor Is In. Let's load them up, and we will get to your calls. Thank you. You do whatever you want. Who am I to tell you what to do?
Your words are super wise, man.
You're listening to The Doctor. Come in, pull up a couch, let's talk. The Doctor Is In.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith. And Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
You know what that reminds me of, that song? Gunsmoke. Remember Gunsmoke? Longest running TV series in history. 18 years. You know how tall Matt Dillon was? 6'8". Kitty was 5'1", 5'2". They typically filmed her standing on a box when she was standing next to Matt Dillon. Just a little TV trivia there. Andy from Lincoln, Nebraska, one of the, one of the few capitals named after a president. Hi, Andy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Dr. Ray?
Well, nothing gaining on me that I know of. I always say nothing gaining on me, but that could be happening, and I don't know it.
That's good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm calling because I just read in the news today, actually, I had on Google, I believe it was, that our Lincoln City Council passed an ordinance or regulation that prohibits sexual reassignment therapy. And the only folks I've ever heard talk about that are Catholics. I'm not Catholic, but, you know, I'm getting there maybe.
When you say, Andy, when you say they prohibit sexual reassignment therapy, do you mean that if someone comes into a therapist and says, "I regret my moving from male to female in my mind, and I want to go back to my biological sex," they're saying, "No, you can't do that as a therapist." Is that it?
Well, it's aimed at children. I believe they don't want parents to be able to bring their children in, and if their children are saying, I don't identify as a male, even though I outwardly exhibit all male traits. I believe that's what it was. I didn't read it that
thoroughly. Yeah, the therapist is not allowed. Therapist is not allowed to.
They're not trying to.
That kind of stuff frightens the heck out of me. Andy, that kind of stuff frightens the heck out of me. And I'll tell you what, I don't have to be religious to be frightened by that. I just have to believe in some sense of reality and science and therapeutic freedom. When they start saying that a person who comes to you, and even if it's a parent, because parents bring kids in for all kinds of reasons that the kids wouldn't come in for. So if someone comes to you as a therapist and says, I would like work on this aspect of my life. And then the powers that be who have self-anointed say, oh, no. This is one area that as a therapist, you cannot intervene, even if the client wants you to. That is so frightening to me. And that has already happened in a lot of jurisdictions regarding homosexual attraction. If someone comes to a therapist and says, I have a homosexual attraction, I would like to live heteronormally, to use that term, can you help me? The therapist, I believe, in many states would have to say, no, I can't. Sorry, not allowed. Now, in my opinion, and I think there are plenty who think this, this is a classic example of ideology trumping science and trumping the client's freedom. I don't know how to respond to it. It just scares the hell out of me. It just does.
I have a question along the line that's related, and it comes from, I've got a pretty strong background in horses and horse genetics, and I teach 4-H'ers all about that stuff. So, you know, I understand that that there's a whole lot of biology that goes into defining sexuality far beyond just X and Y chromosomes. What is the Catholic perspective on what makes a human being male or female? Is it simply X and Y chromosomes, or does it go beyond that?
That is the basis of it. The XX, which is present in every cell of the body, the trillions of cells of the body, and the XY, which determines the maleness. But it's related to an awful lot of other differences that we have discovered between males and females, not just physically, but neurologically. There are massive differences between males and females. Now, you want to put a value judgment on it? You don't. That's reality. This is, you don't have to be religious to say, well, you know, sure looks like that you have all the male aspects of your sexuality, even though in your mind you are deciding and saying, no, I'm not male. That can bring a person into great conflict with how he's wired. Interestingly enough, I think it was Johns Hopkins. They stopped for a while doing gender reassignment surgeries because what they found was after the surgery, the people did not achieve a state of contentment and psychological wholeness and settlement. What they found was it got worse, that the suicide rate went higher, the number of diagnoses attached to the person went up. This is something, well, now they do them again, by the way. They've changed that policy. But this is research that's coming out that's being squashed. It is being squashed. And again, this should frighten you. If this is the case, if this is reality, if this happens to people who say, I do not identify myself according to my body, and they say, I want to live differently, and I want to have surgery to make me be differently, and there is evidence that says, oh, there's risks in this, the outcome is not necessarily what you had predicted, then we need to bring that up as scientists, as people who look at reality. And when you don't, when you say, nope, that's taboo, you can't talk about that. That is a classic example of ideology just crushing reality and science. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't even have to be Christian to recognize biologically based differences. But the Catholics, understandably, believe in science. And indeed, when God made them male and female, that's the way the biology says. So I'm not going to get into the whole idea of, well, what if a person's mind is not in line with his sex? What if his gender is not in line with his sex? That's a topic that, well, there's an awful lot of debate going on right now about. Anything else, Andy?
Do you think that that concept goes into the therapy in terms of looking into whether the mind feels that it's not in accord with their body, or, you know,
it is not.
It almost seems like in culture today, it's a fad to be metrosexual, or,
well,
you know, if you want to put a label on it.
Your observation has just been confirmed by a recent survey. Hold on a second. My wife sent it to me. Let me get it here. Okay. Where is the survey on this? Who did it? It just says American self-identified sexual orientation by generation. Okay. Those born before 1946 identified themselves as bisexual at 0.3%. In the baby boomers, it stayed that way, 0.3%, those born between 46 and 64. From 65 to 80, it went to 1.8% identifying themselves as bisexual. In other words, I can have relations with either sex. Millennials, those generally viewed as under 35 or so, it went to 5.1%. Now, of the young people born between 1997 and 2002, those identifying themselves as bisexual is 11.5%.
Wow.
Yes. Now, any asking psychologist would say, have we altered the genetic makeup, the genetic predispositions of people so radically in 40 years? Or are there social things going on? Okay, that's a fair question. The homosexual attraction since the traditionalists, those born before 1946, and to the young ones now, has gone up seven times. Seven times what it was in terms of admitted homosexual attraction. Now someone might say, well, okay, obviously, in 1946, you just didn't admit it, you didn't say it. I got that. I know that part. But the question is raised, is something else going on besides predisposition? So, interestingly enough, one other point to make here, Andy. You said that the discrepancy between the mind and the body, that is a common thing in therapy. With, say, for example, a 14-year-old girl who is anorexic, much of the time, her mind says she's a fat person, and she's not. She's not even fat at all, not even remotely close to being a fat person. But her mind sees her as a fat person. And the therapist, or whatever intervention they use, attempts to get her mind back to reality. You're not a fat person. You're dangerously skinny. Okay? Delusional states. I am George Washington. No, you're not. This is a delusion. This is not reality. You are not George Washington. But I am. I identify as George Washington. Yeah, in the past, this kind of severing from reality has been something that therapists have been allowed to deal with. Well, now when you start saying, no, you can't deal with it, like I say, that just frightens me, and I do not know where we're going to land with it. Andy, thank you so very, very much for the call. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call. Get on the program. I'm Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is? Go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge them and to say, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Who may be baptized into the Catholic faith? The Catholic Catechism tells us that baptism may only be administered to a person who has never been previously baptized. When an adult is baptized, he undergoes a preparation for the sacrament called the catechumenate. The candidate for baptism is called a catechumen. The catechumen should be properly initiated into the mystery of salvation and the practice of the evangelical virtues. They should also be introduced into the life of faith, liturgy, and charity of the people of God by successive rites. Baptism of infants is, the Catechism says, an immemorial tradition of the Church. Church law urges that a child be baptized as soon after birth as possible, in order that the baby not be denied the priceless grace of becoming a child of God as soon as possible. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Rigorini, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Change is inevitable. Except from a vending machine. That's right. Okay, Joseph from St. Louis is asking. Well, I'll let Joseph ask it. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. You ask it, Joseph.
So yeah. You quoted some statistics regarding generations and percentage that claim bisexual. And I've watched this develop just throughout my lifetime, and I've wondered, you know, everybody talks about societal impacts, but, you know, are there any environmental impacts? Because if it was something else, maybe we'd investigate, you know, plasticizers or other environmental impacts that could cause such a change.
There are those who have brought that up. There are those who have said that, in fact, there seems to be some hormonal confusion involved in all this. I have seen a number of kids who it is very difficult to tell on the basis of their physical features, maleness or femaleness. That's just an informal observation. There are those who say, what we're eating is filled with certain hormones and certain things discarded into various places in our environment. Yeah, the trouble with making that connection is sometimes it's real hard because there are so many other factors interplaying. But there are people, and there are, well, I think relatively respectable people who would say that can be a component. But teasing it out is going to be really tough.
I agree. It's just, you know, when you see a swing like that, and those are pretty big numbers, you know, immediately my mind goes to, you know, perhaps it's more than just societal, you know. Perhaps there's something else at play.
It can be more than societal. The question becomes, what is the major impetus in it? Everything that we have indicates that our entertainment, our media, is relentlessly pushing upon people that sexuality is anything you want it to be.
It's anywhere, anyhow, with anybody that you want it to be, no matter what. So the younger people who are great imbibers of all of this and who by and large are drifting from traditional religious viewpoints are the ones most vulnerable to this. My daughter, when she was working at a fast food place, told me that of the 15 boys there, 6 of them declared that they had same-sex attraction. That's 40%. That figure has never held in human history in terms of some kind of biological genetic predisposition. Even abuse that can be, it is a factor in same-sex attraction. So what would account for that? A friend of mine whose son goes to a West Coast school, I guess there was a poll among the kids, and something like 60% of them said that you need to try relations with both sexes to know what you are. So when you're dealing with those kinds of new social realities, you would expect that these kinds of things would happen. I'll tell you, Joseph, I get more and more referrals. Something 15 years ago I never had, ever, from parents who are saying, my daughter has just informed us at age 12 that she wants to be a boy. This is an interesting phenomenon because typically gender confusion was the realm of males. Now it is predominantly the realm of females, especially within those early years. I don't want to drift too far into this, but the nominee, she was formerly the director of health for Pennsylvania. She's been nominated by the Biden administration as deputy secretary, I think, Health and Human Services. She has just recently come out and said that, I don't want to misquote it. The gist of it was, if the child wants to alter their gender identity, you have to help them do that before puberty hits. The implication being, of course, that puberty has a very powerful effect on how you identify. And there's research that says that many of the girls who have claimed that they're confused about their gender identity, once puberty hits and passes, they return to their birth sex. So I suspect that might have been, although I can't know, that might have been one of the reasons why this nominee said this. Anything else, Joseph? Anything else?
Well, no, and I don't mean to contribute to shock and awe in any way. It's just, you know, the age-old debate between nature versus nurture or environment or society, right? I hear a lot about one aspect. I don't hear anything about the other.
I've heard a lot of aspects about environmental, okay, causes. My experience is, having whatever familiarity I am with the research and the publicity on it, is that the social factors right now are much more accounting for this huge shift, especially social media. I can't tell you how many parents come into my office, and if one of the first things I ask them when their daughter says, I'm not sure I want to be a girl anymore, I said, is she on social media? Yes. Does she have friends on social media who are saying this? Yes. Okay, now that's anecdotal, but I've seen it. Thanks, Joseph. I appreciate the call, my friend. All right, sir. We have to be able to talk openly and freely about this. That is the nature of scientific investigation. You look at potential factors in a phenomenon. You observe them, And to the degree possible, you test them. Very hard to test social phenomenon. So many variables are involved. You can draw some conclusions on the basis of maybe surveys, general observations over time. You can say, well, we believe these are the factors involved in these changes. You can say this, and you could be accurate. But again, from a purely experimental approach, it's difficult. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call. Get on the program. Want to hear from you. Thank you. I'm done.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real-life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Eucharistic Stewardship, bringing Christ to people and people to Christ. Question: do you believe Jesus to be truly present in the Eucharist? If you are Catholic, then your answer should be a resounding yes. The pinnacle act of stewardship through our Christian faith as Catholics is to bring Christ to people and people to Christ. As Catholics, the number one way to ultimately achieve this way of life is through receiving the Eucharist. The minimum requirement of receiving Jesus through the Eucharist coincides with the third commandment, keep holy the Sabbath, and thus receiving communion at Mass. But if you want to go above and beyond what's expected, then perhaps consider making daily communion a top priority. Or encourage others to make this positive change with you. The sacraments of Holy Communion and Reconciliation are two of the most powerful and transforming ways to bring you closer to the love, peace, and forgiveness of Jesus Christ. Another act of stewardship to bring one into communion with Christ might initially start by first bringing that person into the Catholic faith. Since the Eucharist is the focal point of our faith, your knowledge of the Eucharist is important. However, that's where priests in the RCI program can assist in explaining our faith and the role of the Eucharist. In summary, spend some time in prayer to discern how the Eucharist can play a greater role in a stewardship way of life for you or for someone you care. This is Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
I will bet you $11.25 that you don't know how much I lost in nickel-dime poker with my friends over the weekend. Dr. Ray, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Todd, calling from Houston, Texas, Guadalupe Radio Network. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Dr. Ray.
There has been research. But it is, how should I put this? It is not elevated in the mainstream literature. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
In other words, at this point, it seems that what is happening is that the transgender movement, for those who declare that they are transgender, is accepted without question, without any kind of exploration. And to do otherwise would be totally inappropriate, not only clinically, but in terms of societally. So if you say, is there a correlation between a child who is confused about his gender and a lack of father? Now, that's a legitimate area of exploration. I'm not aware of anything done in that area. There probably has been. But my guess would be, if so, it's probably been done in more Christian types of settings as opposed to mainstream social sciences. That'd be my guess. Obviously, you could check and see. You could do a search and see if, in fact, one of the things that has come out, and I think there is talk of this among therapists and social science people, is when there is gender confusion, for some, there is also other confusion in terms of emotional confusion, in terms of how to run my life, in terms of my history. It's a struggle. It's a personal struggle, and the gender confusion may be part of that. But to say that, especially right now, is risking blowback that's tremendous. I don't know if you just heard this, but introduced, and I'm not sure quite where it is in California, if it is the whole state or if it is in fact some area, introduced as a bill, was that stores should be fined or will be fined if they separate boys and girls' clothing. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Kind of shocking, isn't
it? It's crazy.
I know.
We're obviously different, but, you know.
The intensity to blur the differences between the sexes is at a fever pitch. If you watch anything on TV, if you watch movies, if you watch any kind of web streaming series, typically the women pound the bad guy. If there's a foot race, the woman runs ahead of the guy. She's faster. She gets to him. Where the guy gets pounded by the bad guy, the woman kicks his butt. Now, there certainly are women who are capable of doing this. But by and large, that's not reality. That is just not reality. Men are bigger, stronger, more aggressive. That's just the way it's designed. But the media world pretty much is attempting to obliterate any kind of physical differences. You'll notice it and pay attention to it. Todd, anything else, sir?
No, that's it. It just seems that the correlation is pretty strong, that fatherlessness in the home has increased as the gender dysphoria has increased. So I just wondered if there was any research.
I'm sure there is. I'm just wondering how it's been treated. For example, there was a study done, and I've alluded to this before. There was a study done, a survey, by Brown University folks. And they concluded that in the gender dysphoria situation for a lot of kids, they need to explore social factors that would be involved. That study was removed. It was taken out. So
anything that goes against the narrative.
Unfortunately, that kind of momentum is really powerful right now. I've never seen anything like it, not only in the whole area of gender confusion, but in so many other areas. As I've said before in this program, whenever I have ventured into even raising questions about how we are handling COVID, I've been skewered in emails. How dare I? You know, and there's an irony to that, because any other topic I speak about, including abortion, anything that would have societal controversy, I've not gotten that kind of feedback. But when you deal with COVID and you just ask any kinds of honest questions, which scientists are now asking, by the way, I can't believe some of the emails. Not nice. All right. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it so much. Dr. Ray, in the words of Douglas MacArthur, in the Philippines, when he had to leave, I shall return.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights, beginning with the right to life. The government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
How can we have faith and be transformed by the gospel? What part can we play in recreating the world for God's good plan? Once we understand that the gospel is not merely good news, but explosive, life-changing news, our life will never be the same. In Father John Ricardo's new book, Rescued, The Unexpected and Extraordinary News of the Gospel, he helps us to see the world through the lenses of God, with a clear vision of the plot and the outcome of the story that we're living through. You can get Rescued and Father John's other great books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Keep your feet firmly planted on the ground, and you will struggle to put your pants on. Let's go to Valerie from Pennsylvania. Valerie has an adopted son, 6 years of age. Hi, Valerie.
Hello.
Congratulations on your son. Where did you adopt him from?
Utah.
Utah. Okay, so this was a private adoption or agency?
Oh, an agency. It's called A Act of Love.
Mm-hmm.
In Utah.
How's he doing?
Generally, he's doing good. But I have a friend who adopted two children, her only two children she adopted, and I was talking to her when he was born, and she said, you know, I was talking about how to introduce the concept of adoption to him, and she said they say to say it right away and early on, and that it will make him feel more comfortable with it. So when I didn't think about it, he was an infant, and then when he was around three, he asked me about him being in my belly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to deflect with talking about God put you in my heart, and you had been in my heart for years. I was praying for you. And so he kept insisting on telling the story, you know, how kids want to know about the story about how they were in your belly. So mom's belly. So I said, you were in a girl's Krista, you know, her belly, and she, you know, and I'm telling him a story about how God told Krista about mommy and daddy, and, you know, and I tried to put it that way. At that point on, he became, very curious about, like, other families. Like, he'd walk up to mothers wherever we were with children, and he would just, like, start following them. It was, like, strange. And I'm like, where are you going? And he's like, well, I'm going to go with so-and-so. His mommy said I could go, or I could stay with his mommy, too. And I'm like, so I don't know, like, in my mind, he was searching for, like, understanding how you could be in one woman's belly, but yet your mommy's another. So I just let it go, and I kept saying the same thing about, you know, God and putting you in my heart. And then, so it's getting a little bit better, but he doesn't walk off like he's older now, so he doesn't do that as much. But he's very much like, he'll say to me, you're my only mommy, right, mommy? You know, and it just breaks my heart, and I don't know I mean, other than, of course, I tell him yes. I'm wondering just better words to speak to him about it.
There's good news and bad news.
Yeah.
The good news is that you absolutely sound beautiful in how you explained all this to your son. The bad news is you expect him to understand it. He's six. So he took what you told him, and he kind of reasoned his own little six-year-old mind and said, oh, well, I'm going to follow those people and see if, in fact, I can, maybe I can get hooked up with them, find out what's going on with them. And you're finding out he's abandoning that as he gets older. So that's good. And also you would have to stop him from doing that because that's rude. So you would stop it.
Yeah.
I wrote a book on adoption, and one of the common questions in the book was, when do you tell him? When do you say anything? Your experience with your son is a most common one, which is their curiosity, seeing a pregnant woman, was I in your belly, mommy? And you explained it very beautifully. God put you in my heart, but you were in another mommy's belly. Okay. God gave you to us. And most kids accept that. They just do. They don't run with it much further. Maybe when they get a little older, they ask more sophisticated questions. But for the most part, you know, when your friend, there's controversy on what your friend is saying. In the sense that I've had many, many adoption workers say things like, well, you need to tell them. You need to tell them right away quick. You need to tell them as soon as you can. And you need to keep emphasizing it. You need to keep saying things like, we're so glad we adopted you. We're so happy you came to our family. Let's have a birthday for your adoption day. And I lean way against that. That's on one hand, maybe the intention is good. But on the other hand, it singles the kid out. The bottom line is, I love you desperately, and that overwhelms anything else regarding your history. Anything else. And I'm not going to keep pounding away of your adoption status. You're my son. You couldn't be my son more than you are. That's what I told all my kids. And I said, if you tell me I'm not your dad, I'm going to kill you. So you better tell me I'm your dad. No, I have to deal with it. You got to deal with it gently. So,
well, I'm Italian. I heard that a lot, even when I wasn't adopted.
That's right. Don't tell me, I'll kill you.
That's right.
Thankfully, I navigated childhood. But if I were you at this point, I probably would just be open to any more questions that he asks. And you explain it at his level. You don't have to go into major detail. You know, how did I get in that lady's belly? Oh, boy. Okay, we don't have to get into that.
Right.
You know.
Right.
She ate watermelon, and the seeds were planted, and you grew. There you go. Okay.
Right.
But you don't, and you don't. Here's the biggest thing I can give you, Valerie. Don't think that if somehow you don't handle this psychologically correctly, in the adoption handbook, page 47, subsection 3B, paragraph C, that you're going to mess your kid up.
Right, that's the fear, yeah.
I know! You're his mom, you love him desperately, you care for him every day, you show him a million ways how he's your son. That overwhelms any other thing that you might missay or somehow not be sophisticated. And you found out, by the way, and you will find out, by the way, that there isn't a uniform view on how to do this. So you can't even say 97.26% of people believe that this is the appropriate adoption talk that I should have. That's not there. It doesn't exist.
Right. And I'm more interested in a Catholic perspective anyway.
Heck yeah. God gave us to you, son. I couldn't love you more than I do.
And let him ask the questions. Don't bring it up. And I don't we don't do any of that.
He already knows he's adopted. He already knows. As he gets older, he's going to ask a few other curious questions. Why didn't she keep me? That's a common one. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm very gentle. I say, go look in the mirror. Look how ugly you are. You see? Why would she keep you? No, I would never say that. you say something
is
like
that
she
in your
wanted.
Book?
No.
Questions.
She wanted
I'm gonna
you
to buy this book.
She wanted you to have a mommy and a daddy. and she didn't have a daddy for you. You know, something along those lines.
Well, that's the hard part for me as explaining it to him, because they actually are still together and they have a 16-month-old together.
Well, then you could say, I'm going to have to run here, Derek, because I'm going to get cut off by the music. You could say, she couldn't take care of you, son. She just couldn't take care of you in her life at that time, you know. Thank you, my dear, so very, very much. This is Dr. Ray. I appreciate everything you guys do. Walk with God. Hold him tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.